Now back to the Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
Welcome to our normal show here. 1-800-859-0957 or thegardeningshow.com. And I need, before I forget, I need to, again, as always, thank two very important people. Rich Lozinski, who is the engineer today, and if it sounds good on your radio, it's not because of my voice, it's because of what Rich is doing to it. So we thank you. And the speaking of great voices, the friendly great voice that you're talking to when you call me is Annie Nichols. Annie, thank you so much. And if you want to talk to Annie and you really don't want to talk to me, that's okay too, but here's the phone number, 1-800-859-0957, or you can email me at thegardeningshow.com. While you're, take a look at thegardeningshow.com. We put up a lot of information last week. In trellis damage, we got some tomato stuff on tomatoes. A very important one for all of us. All of us spill chemicals in our home. I don't care. It's not, it has to be pesticides, but other things around the house that it can be hazardous. And there's a great article in there from Bindo Baca about the kit, the things that you need and how to do it. Some information on giant hogweed. And this one is a bad, bad plant. It is around. It's rare, thank goodness. But this can cause severe burns. I mean, serious scarring. It's bad news. Take a look at it. And if you have any thought that you may have seen a plant like this, you need to report it to appropriate authorities. Turf diseases are on there. We're getting talks about cankers and other information with maples. And Joe from Washington Township, I owe you a big thanks because you called in after the show and talked to me about one of my pet peeves and one of yours, and that's people who are mounding mulch up around the trunks of trees. Two bad things happen in that case. First of all, you're wasting a lot of good mulch. You only need 2 inches. The other thing is that if the mulch touches the base of a plant, and it doesn't have to be a tree, it stays wet. And when that happens, the bark becomes susceptible to fungal attack. So not a good thing to do. And it's a joke. You're right. And it bugs me, too. So we took care of that. 1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Judy in Saginaw. Judy, welcome to the Gardening Show. Finally.
Yeah.
Thank you for being so patient.
A little background. I'm a mile north of the Shiawassee Game Reserve.
Okay, sure.
On the western end.
Getting close to God's country up there.
I'm in God's country,
yeah,
I think.
I agree. Okay. I get a whole bunch of people further north of you going to get mad at me about that, but that's okay.
Yeah.
What's up?
A very disabled senior citizen, practically on welfare. I'm in pain most of the time. My distraction is feeding the birds.
Okay, great.
And outside of my 10-foot picture window is a redbud tree, mm-hmm. which is home to the birds.
Sure.
It's been there for years. It's very old. 3 years ago, it had hundreds of thousands of seeds.
Right.
Last year, it had a few.
Right.
This year, it has none.
Okay.
I thought I was going to lose it because it was so hot and dry even
right.
3 years ago. So I put a soaker hose around the drip line.
Sure.
How long should I do that again? It's 94 degrees. I'm looking at a thermometer. Should I start the soaker hose now? How long should I let it run?
Okay.
Will it save the tree?
Well, okay, Judy, first of all, let's back up. What does the tree look like? Do the you have nice leaves? Are they good-sized? Are they normal?
Yeah, I would say so, except one branch.
Yeah, usually
branch is the leaves are smaller.
Okay, sometimes they get into a little bit of a problem. If it's a small branch, I'm not terribly worried about it. Okay, the thing with the seeds is that the tree is responding to stresses and also temperatures and a lot of other environmental factors. And that would be normal. A lot of trees go into this non-uniform flowering, and that's really what it is. And I'm not, that's normal too, so it sounds like your tree is doing pretty well. I can't tell you how long to run your hose because I don't know how big, how much water is being applied. But here's the thing. You've got to put enough water on it to soak down about 2 feet. And to me, with the normal house water pressure, are you on a pump or are you on Saginaw
City water?
City water. So it's running at 28 pounds or something like that. You're going to be running a normal soaking hose without turning it on full blast, so you're blowing things apart, probably 12 to 14 hours or more.
So all the while I'm awake.
I'd leave it run overnight.
Oh.
No problem. Actually, it's better.
At night instead of the daytime.
Well, as long as it's not squirting up in the air so the tree gets wet. The idea of that is the water pressure.
No, the soaker hose just oozes water. Yeah. It doesn't.
Run it for 12 to 14 hours at least. Run it at night because the water pressure will be higher at night. And that, I'm guessing, Judy, but it certainly won't hurt. And I think this kind of thing is getting to be a real necessity for another thing, a lot of plants. However, Judy, stay on the line. You don't have to stay on the line, but stay listening. Let me talk to you about how to water trees another way, Judy, and I'm going to ask you to be even more patient with me, if you don't mind, because I've got to go answer some other questions and talk to some people.
I also want to know if I should fertilize it in any
okay.
way.
Okay, stay on the line. We'll be talking to Judy and maybe you. 1-800-859-0957, thegardeningshow.com. In The Gardening Show and meet Dean Kroskoff. I'll be back soon, so stay tuned.
You're listening to The Gardening Show with Dean Kroskoff.
Oh, welcome back. And we were talking to Judy in Saginaw about how to water her redbud tree. And Judy, thank you again for being patient with me today. One of the things that you can do, and I know you said you were disabled and it was difficult for you to get out there, but if you wanted to put a tuna fish can under the hose, something like that, and just see how long it takes to fill it up. That would be very useful information. It tells you how much water you're putting on in a length of time. Another thing that you can do, I know, we were talking about a restricted budget, too. There are things out there. The common name for them is a gator bag or tree gator bag. You may have seen it on newly planted trees, especially along highways. It's a big green bag, and they fill it full of water, and the water soaks out slowly. There's all kinds of different names of these. There's different sizes, and they work. They work very well. Now, they don't work on large trees. If you're trying to water a 20-year-old maple, there's just, you'd have to put 4 or 5 of those around outside the drip line. But for a redbud tree, the one that sounds like yours, maybe one of those out near, on the trunk or slightly away from it might work real well. So it's something you might want to think about.
How about some milk jugs with tiny holes in the bottom and a few stones and fill them up with water?
Yeah, it would help. I think I'd go with the soaker hose before I do that because you're talking about 30 to 40 gallons of water at least. Yeah, it's the amount. You could do it, but I think the soaker hose would be a better choice in that case. I'm just bringing that up, the tree gator bag. It works well for shrubs. It works wonderfully for newly planted trees. And I think in a case for a small tree, wouldn't work badly here, in this case either. Okay?
Okay.
Thank you. And it sounds like your tree's doing okay. Got my fingers crossed, but from what you told me, Jody, it sounds like it's doing okay. Okay?
Do I fertilize it?
No, not now. And I don't ever, I rarely fertilize red buds. They really don't need it. I think it's just fine. Okay.
You've been a blessing.
Well, good luck up there. Enjoy your birds. And I hope the tree does well. It sounds like it's doing just fine to me. Thank you, Judy.
I'm so thankful. Bye.
Let's go to Peter in Southfield. Peter, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, this is Pat, not Peter.
I'm sorry, it's Pat. I do know the difference, but I just can't read, so.
That's okay, my husband made the call for me.
Oh, okay.
Would you repeat the name of the clematis that you told a couple callers ago about the best growing, fullest flowers.
Sure, sure. And for those of you listening out there that have no idea what Pat and I are talking about, there was a special edition of The Gardening Show carried on some of the stations of our network earlier, and we got talking about clematis. And the one, Pat, that I was talking about, and a caller and I, it's called Jackmanni. J-A-C-K-M-A-N-I.
J-A-C-K-M-A-N-I. M-A-N-I.
It's
a
purple.
Thank you very much.
Well, let me describe it for you. It's purple with a yellow center, as I remember it, but the big three-inch flowers, and it's one of the most hardy, aggressive clematises out there. So it's really a great plant.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for being patient.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye. Let's go to Dawn in Sterling Heights, and let's see who's up next. Linda in Ohio, stay tuned. Dawn, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Hey.
Go ahead. What's
How
up?
How are you?
Go ahead, Dawn.
I have a maple leaf, lace leaf tree. I bought the house 17 years ago, and it was in the middle of the summer, and it was dead. I realized that once I started cutting off the dead branches on it, it started to come back. And it's
good.
Huge now. It's 17 feet by about 6-7 feet. It's only supposed to be a miniature one, but it grows on the top and then dies underneath, and I just, you know, trim the dead branches off underneath.
Okay.
But now
sure.
I'm coming to find the roots are actually getting big enough to where it's heading towards the cement work, the sidewalk.
Yeah.
The driveway, and I'm worried that it's going to actually kill the tree because it doesn't have enough room to keep growing. So I don't know what to do at this point.
Okay. Is it in a place that you have to mow? Is there grass underneath it by any chance?
No, there's no grass. In fact, I had to bring out my rock garden because it was getting so bad that when I cut the grass, I had to go too far underneath. You know, I didn't want to go underneath and disturb the tree.
Okay.
So I brought out the rocks further, and it's even getting bigger now, and I try to trim it back, but it's one of those that grows on top, so you can't contain it, you know what I mean, or you won't have a tree. That's what my guessing is, anyways.
Oh.
So I don't know what to do. Do I go underneath the grass and try cutting some of the roots back?
No.
Or?
That one is a no-no, Dawn, and The reason is that you'll see damage on the top of the tree very quickly.
Okay.
So cutting roots is always a bad idea. What you need to do is what's called selective pruning. In other words, over a period of about three years, mm-hmm. you're going to whack this tree back into line. And there are guides out there. Now, this is what kind of maple was it again? I missed that part.
It's a lace leaf, a really fine lace leaf.
The red one or the green one, the green leaf?
It's the red one.
Okay. It's a Japanese maple. It's a Japanese red leaf maple. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
All right. Now, I'm going to put some information on pruning it up on my website, The Gardening Show. But the thing about it is that basically what you're going to have to do in the wintertime, I usually prune them in March just because I can see what I'm doing and the weather isn't so miserable.
Right.
Selectively take some of those shoots back. And you'll leave about two-thirds this year. You'll leave another third next year. And by the third year, you've got a new tree, basically. You can't whack this thing back all at once. You can. It's risky. They don't like it.
I have done that before because I didn't want it to get bigger than the actual rock garden around it. So I did whack it back a little bit. In fact, my husband got upset with me and said, "You killed the tree." I'm like, "No, it's going to come back."
Okay.
And it did. It was fine. But,
did you hedge clip it? Did you hedge clip it?
I just clipped it as close to the.
No, but what I mean.
As I could.
Yeah, but I mean hedge clipping is you made it nice and round and even all on sides and things like that.
I had a really good sharp clipper and clipped it right to the thick part of the branch.
Well, you can do that again, but don't make it a roundy moundy. Selectively take off the most aggressive limbs, and just kind of. Keep it back. It's going to outgrow you. I'm not worried about it going underneath the side of the driveway or something like that. If you're worried about it, how close to the driveway is it now?
It's near my house. In the middle of my house, I have a brick ranch 60 feet wide. So it's like right in the middle. I'm not worried. It's not going to hurt the cement.
No.
It's not going to,
You can,
up,
though.
I'm not worried about that.
If you are worried about it, there's a trick. And that's, there is some, you know what lawn edging is, or for beds?
Yeah.
There's some that's extra deep. It's about 12 to 18 inches deep. You just take a trencher at the edge of your driveway, put that in place, and then put the soil back in place. And that'll make sure that the root doesn't go under it. But I'll bet the roots are under there already.
Sure they are, because, like I said, they were coming up over the grass on the edging, and I'm like, oh, no. I was worried that it was going to kill the tree itself.
No. It's just you got to get rid of the grass and don't try to mow it and just put mulch out. I would go with the rocks or mulch all the way out and just not mess with it.
Right.
Yeah. And selectively prune it. Take out some of the real stuff. A lot of times you'll see one or two branches that really get aggressive. You take those down and just try to keep it in shape. Eventually, it's going to get pretty big. And then you got some really, really good independent landscapers there in Sterling Heights that operate in that area.
Right.
And you can also check on my webpage. If you get into the top of thegardeningshow.com, on the top, there's a whole list of references. Down in there someplace is a way to find a certified arborist in your area.
Okay.
You might want to talk to them, and you just put in your area code, and it pops up. You might want to talk to somebody now and think about in a few years of having that tree moved and replace it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm gonna have to do.
Check with the arborist for that. Hey, if you got questions about trees or anything, shrubs, things, let's talk about watering. I got grubs on the mind. That sounds a little bit weird, but, it's that kind of show. And if you'd like to call, 1-800-859-0957. Stay tuned.
You're listening to The Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
And you can join our conversation, 1-800-859-0957. Check my webpage out, thegardeningshow.com, because I'm going to put up on the webpage an article on grub control. I don't know about you, but I saw this week my first Japanese beetles, which means they'll be out and laying eggs, which for the next about 30 days. They're about 2 weeks early, as everything is going this year. And it's been a really bad year for European chafer. So both of the lawn-destroying insects are out and actively doing their thing. So now is the time to put on, if you've had a history of grub problems, you know you've got an issue, now is the time to put on the grub control material. And on my webpage at thegardeningshow.com, I will put up an article on the grub different types of materials out there and some interesting facts about what you can choose. The other thing you might want to think about, and check out EnviroWeather. It's in that same group of references as with the at the top of the page. And the reason I say that is because most of us are taught over the years that an inch of water per week on our gardens, our lawns, should be much or more inadequate. That may or may not be true. I was looking at EnviroWeather, which is a listing in that point, and it MSU's Agricultural Weather Service. And if you look in there, click into turf, you can find what's called predicted evapotranspiration, which is the amount of water lost by the plant and the soil combined. And just as a rule of thumb, in the last 2 weeks on the site I was looking at, it was averaging more than an inch and a half of water loss per week. So we got to add water more frequently, and we also have to water to a greater extent, or more per week. So, it's that time of year. I don't know where July went, but we're right now in the middle of August. Let's go to Linda in Ohio, and who's up next? Okay, we'll click. And Janet in North Royalton, Ohio, you're up next. So, Linda, welcome to The Gardening Show.
Hi, thank you very much. I have a quick question. My question regards planting a weeping cherry tree. I've planted like three in my yard, at least three. One had some type of bug issue, and when I bought the house, I noticed that more than half of the branches had been, like, cut off in order to possibly get rid of the bugs. But then I planted the other three. I planted one with organic soil, and it seemed like it did fairly well through the winter, and I thought maybe when I had my lawn treated and fertilized that maybe the guy sprayed it by accident, because it was really a baby tree, and it died, and then I had two others die. And the guy that plants my trees, each time he says that the soil is infested with ants. So I guess my question is there something that I can do, and is soil ever too bad to plant a tree, that type of tree?
Short answer, yes and no. Okay. You wanted a short question, short answer. No, I'm sorry. It's been a long day.
Is there anything that I can do?
Wait a minute. Let's back up.
Okay.
You know, after Janet Maconovich, who's my good friend, and I learn an awful lot from her, has taught me one of the things that's very important. You don't know a plant until you've killed it three times. You've killed four of them. So there's something else going on here, Linda. Here's the thing with weeping cherries. First of all, you've got to get a healthy plant. And that means the source, whoever you're buying them from, I always go to my independent garden centers.
Okay.
You got some good. What part of Ohio are you in?
In Cleveland. And that was my thought for
Cleveland,
one of them.
Sure. You got a couple of really great ones in Cleveland. Wow. Yeah. Check. First of all, you start out with a good quality plant. Secondly, you put a $100 plant in a $400 hole. And here's what I'm thinking about. Weeping cherries are not the hardiest plant in the world. They're short-lived. If you get 10 to 15 years out of them, I think I'm very happy.
Wow.
But they don't, if they're in an exposed area, especially if you've got that southwest wind coming in the wintertime,
mm-hmm.
They don't like that. And that really is not a good site. So think about the site. And you may think, well, I need to give this tree some more protection. And that's the second thing. The third thing, then, I would go, Linda, do you mind digging holes?
Well, actually, I'm not the one that plants it.
No, I didn't say that. I said, do you mind getting dirty and digging a hole?
Well, actually, I'm going to stand by and watch the person dig it and watch him get dirty, but I'm going to be right over them.
Okay. I'd still say you might want to dig your hole. But here's what I'm talking about, and it's not the hole. I want to be able to tell you that there's no compacted zones down underneath or something like that. And the hole I'm talking about is once you figure out this protected area issue,
mm-hmm.
And make sure it fits into the design of your yard, obviously, I would go out there with a shovel, and I'm serious, and I would do it, and just go down about 2.5 to 3 feet.
Okay.
And just dig. And if you can do it easily, you know, without huffing and puffing, and I'm not trying to have a heart attack here, and
okay.
You don't feel an area where it's really, really hard to dig through,
mm-hmm.
and go down 3 feet and just leave that hole sit for a while. And there's no water comes in the bottom. In other words, after a good rain or something, there'll be water in it, obviously, but it drains away within 12, 14 hours.
Okay.
That's a good site. Here's another thing that the guy, when you have them plant the tree,
mm-hmm.
you dig the hole. You know, you take the tree out of the container.
Right.
And you measure it. And I want that hole no deeper than that measurement. I want it, well, an inch deeper to soil that has never been disturbed. Because one of the fastest way to kill a tree is plant it too deep. Cut the hole down, and it goes only an inch deeper than the ball root of the tree.
Okay.
Okay. Into undisturbed soil where it will not sink. And then you make the hole at least 4 feet wide. At least, especially if I'm not doing the digging. And I don't want any amendments. No peat moss, no nothing. No compost, no nothing. Okay?
Just the dirt?
You got it.
Okay.
Now, and the reason for that, Linda, is that if I do all this amending, the roots aren't dumb. This is great soil. Why do I have to go out and add other stuff? And they don't. And that's where the tree doesn't get established. The last thing I want them to do is that take all the media off the roots. Now, did you get a burlap tree or one in a container?
One in a container.
Okay, take a hose and take the media off. You pull a mound of soil up in the middle of that beautiful hole that you had dug.
Mm-hmm.
You put the tree on it and you spread the roots out.
Oh.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
You put the soil back on. You water it. Well, there's one other thing that I'll do before that, Linda. I take a piece of 1.5 inch to 2 inch PVC pipe. You know,
okay.
The good white stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It goes down to the base of the, before you fill the hole back up, off to the side where you can get at it. You put that piece of pipe down and cut it just so after you put the soil back in and it settles and you put the mulch in,
mm-hmm.
it sticks up about an inch or two.
I bet that's for water.
No, it's to make sure there's no water in the bottom of the hole.
Wow.
you need to get a cap. Don't screw it. Don't glue it in place. You just put it on the top so it keeps the water up.
Okay.
So when you water it, you look down there with a flashlight. And as soon as you see water in the bottom of the hole, you quit. And if you think you got to water it, you look in the bottom of the hole. If there's water down there, you don't do it. It's the best water gauge I know. And you stay on top of those guys. I mean, you're standing there over their shoulder, making them really sweat it out.
Right.
Because all these issues tell to me is that it's nothing to do with the soil. These plants weren't planted correctly.
I think so. I thought that
You know what I would do, Linda? Are you related to whoever's doing this?
No, actually, it's the young man that takes care of my lawn.
Well, if it was your husband, I wouldn't say this. But if it's the kid taking care of your lawn, is he a pro or is he just taking care of your lawn?
Well, actually, he has a lawn service.
Well, he needs to learn how to plant a tree. Okay, and I'm not worried about the ant issue. That's not it. You might want to get a pro arborist in, somebody that does this.
You know, I think after this, because I really want that type of tree and that.
You might have them come out and check your arborist, talk to your neighbors and find out who does their tree work and stuff, and who does the tree planting the trees. So somebody in every neighborhood that does that. And ask them just to come out and walk your property with you.
Okay.
That'll help. You spend an awful lot of money on a lot of trees that shouldn't have died.
Exactly.
Really.
Well, thank you very much.
Well,
you've given
you
me a
listening.
Lot of good information. And
if you don't get a pro in, teach this guy how to plant a tree.
I think I will get a pro in.
Yeah, I think so. I think it would be useful. And that's not, I'm not being denigrating the gentleman who's doing your lawn. That's another specialty.
I think it's time.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Linda.
Goodbye.
1-800-859-0957. Let's go to Janet in North Royalton, Ohio. Janet, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hi.
Hi. What's going on?
I have moths in my grass, and I was just wondering, do you have any solutions for that?
How shady is it?
It's too shady, and it's clay.
Yep.
It's really taken over part of my garden. I'd really like to get rid of it.
You get two over your garden or over your grass?
My lawn.
Okay.
Grass.
To be honest with you, the short answer is give up and just mulch it out, or you've got to trim the tree and things like that. Janet, can you be a little more patient with me? The background, Rich is telling me that I've got to go to a break. I'd like to talk to you about this a little more if you don't mind.
Okay.
Could you stay with us?
Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We are busy today, but I've got to go. Well, I got to go pay some bills. So stay tuned. More of the Gardening Show. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Gardening Show with Dean Krauskopf.
And I'm speaking to Janet in North Royalton, Ohio. And you can join this conversation. I've got a line open. 1-800-859-0957. Janet, I'm sorry to have to cut you off there.
Yes, okay.
I think you diagnosed your issue when you talked to me earlier about that you've got with the moss in your grass. It's just
right.
too shady, which means it's also probably too dark.
It's also where I get like 6 hours of sunlight, too.
Well,
I looked at it one day. It's in lots of areas.
The grasses evolved in prairies with no trees, no shade. And there are no grasses that I know of that will reliably year after year grow in a shady area, even with 6 hours of sun. It just doesn't happen. You can reseed that area. We can kill the moss off. Usually means it needs to be dried out, however that needs to be done. There's too much
moisture.
How
do you kill it, then?
Usually the approach we take is to, first of all, Jana, is dry the area out.
Okay.
And I don't know if it is a drainage area or there's water stands there or something.
No, there's no drainage area. And water, you know, normally doesn't stand there.
Well,
and it's dry right now, naturally, because of the no rain.
There is a grass or a moss out there that will grow in dry areas. And if that's it, there are materials out there, and I'm just not getting the name at the moment, that's available to a professional lawn care company that will kill it out. And then you can start over.
Any place I could buy something to put on it?
Most of the materials will. How big a patch are we talking about here?
Oh, I don't know. 4 feet in one place, you know, there's a long streak of it. And
there are moss killers that are basically insecticide or a soapy material out there. And mm-hmm. try those first, although most of them will take grass out, too.
Okay, where do I get those? In Home Depot or somewhere?
No, no. I've never seen it in a box store. Find a independent garden center. One
okay.
of the, you know, the family-operated ones. Most of them have a pretty good idea of what we're talking about. And I'm just trying to think of the moss control material. It's not the same stuff as they sell to control moss on roofs. That's different. But it's related. It has a label for use in lawns and things like that.
Can you put it on your website?
If I can find it, I'll try. The thing about it is, though, Jen, and I'm still going back to, you got to get some more sunlight in there, if you can. And the way, usually, that means it's usually trees that have to be trimmed or could be trimmed. If you look at my website, thegardeningshow.com, there is a site on there where you can locate a certified arborist in your area. Just put in your area code and the list will come up. It might be a good idea to have one of those gentlemen or ladies come out and evaluate the trees and see. They can take out 30 to 40% of a tree and you'll never know it, but it'd be amazing how much more light gets through.
Mm-hmm.
And it's good for the tree. It really is. So that's another option. The other option is once you get the grass cleaned out or the moss cleaned out, is you just have to reseed it every year and just keep a thicker grass, even though it won't last year to year, will prevent the moss from moving in, which means it's got to be reseeded every spring.
Okay.
If you really want to go grass in there, it's not going to be fun.
There used to be grass there all the time, so I started neglecting the yard.
Sure.
And didn't fertilize it every year like I should have been doing, and things happened.
Well, if it's like my yard, too, I've forgotten how trees grow till I started looking at a picture of the property. We bought the property 22 years ago, and there's one taxus that was 3 feet tall at that time. I measured it the other day. It's 26 feet now. Trees
wow.
grow. And so you may be dealing with this, and if you're dealing with just tall trees, it's going to be a battle, Janet. Don't blame yourself. Many times
I have tall trees.
Many times
hickory nut trees.
Oh.
They're old trees, and I wish I could cut them down, but I can't.
Oh, please don't. Hickories are wonderful trees. Please don't.
I know, but the nuts.
Yeah, I know. Find somebody that likes the.
Is there a solution to keeping them from blooming every year?
Not really. Nothing do good. Okay, try it. Keep going, Linda. It might not have been your fault. Let's go to Jim in Medina. Jim, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Thank you, Dean. Hey, I got a question for this emerald ash borer.
Okay.
I got a 27-acre woodlot back here. I go back there, and they're devastating that thing. And
sure.
I read on it, it says, well, if you spray the tops, they got some kind of spray that lasts 2 years. I can't reach to the top. And then you got the woodpeckers, they're after the larvae, which is good. Then they're talking about making breeding predators like stingless wasps.
Are doing that. They haven't been established yet. You know? So,
is there any way you can consult me about this, or is this going to be another elm and chestnut thing?
Come up to here to Detroit, Jim, take a look. Every emerald ash tree that hasn't been protected is gone, and that's what's going to happen.
Yeah. That's so sad. I walk back there.
Oh, it is. One thing, though, I'll tell you right now. If you're thinking about, get somebody in there to harvest those logs. Once those trees start to die and they start to rot, they're not any good. And their ash is a valuable wood. And there are people out there that log them. So I apologize. I wish I had better thing. But for that many trees, I can, you know, we can save 20, 10, 15 trees if you want to spend the money. And the cost is going down. But not that many. So let's at least harvest the wood. I'd hate to see it just fall down or burned off. That is a waste. Okay?
Yeah.
Sorry
yeah.
about that.
Okay.
Good luck, Jim. Let's go to Linda.
Thank you.
Yep. Let's go to Linda and Grand Blanc and Alice in Brighton. Stay on the line. If I don't get to talk to you on the air, I will talk to you off. Linda, welcome to the Gardening Show.
Hi, Dean. We've got a huge old spruce tree that I believe has got the Cytosporia blight.
Cytosporia, and is it a blue spruce?
Yeah.
very possible. The old ones, if they're older than 25 years, they almost automatically get it. Although
that's
not 100%.
It started at the bottom and it's moving up.
Very likely.
You know, I know, I mean, it's over 40 feet. I know we're going to probably lose this.
Whoa. First of all, you may.
Yeah.
And I have to say, there's another couple of diseases out there, Linda. So check on my website. There's a couple of spruce diseases, and it's, you just got to read through all the information, but there's some information there.
Okay.
But Cytospora is a disease that the tree, we can't cure it, but we can, if with proper care and a little bit of luck, that tree could be around another 15 to 20 years.
Really?
Oh, yes. It's not a quick death sentence.
So I should get an arborist to...
Oh, no question.
Yeah.
No question on that. The arborist is always a great idea. But there's a certain point where, you know, we can't rescue. But
right.
if up to that point, we can extend the life of that tree by proper watering primarily, proper fertilization, trimming it correctly, and that's a little bit of an art. Those kind of issues can extend it. I'm serious. I've seen trees that were diagnosed 20 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, they're doing okay. They're
yeah.
surviving. And I know,
okay.
yeah, so it's not a death sentence immediately.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, well, so, that's good news. We'll go ahead and get an arborist then.
If you aren't familiar with it, if you check my website, on the reference part, the first part of the page, you'll find a site. It's the International Society of Arborists site. And you put in your zip code.
Right.
And then, you know, the arborist, certified arborist in that area will pop up and you can contact them.
Okay.
And this is not, if they're busy, and they are right now because of all the other issues we've got going on out there.
Right.
This is not something that has to be treated tomorrow. This is a program that will start maybe in this fall and continue onward. So they've got time to get somebody out there and evaluate your tree for
you. Yeah, great.
Okay?
Okay, thanks so much.
Many times, as Linda said, the things that we talk about sounds dire. Yeah, it is, but sometimes it's just like people. Many of us are living with conditions, makes it uncomfortable, but we survive. And trees and plants are just the same. Background music means that I haven't survived. Well, I survived, but the show didn't. Ending is coming up. So, Allison Brighton, stay on the line. I'll talk to you off the air. I've got a whole bunch of information that's going up on my webpage. Garb control, trees for under power lines, how to submit a sample to MSU, iron and manganese chlorosis on maples, Japanese red leaf maple pruning, emerald ash borer information, and some other things that are interesting there. So take a look. If you didn't get a chance to talk to me today, I apologize. We were really busy. But you can email me, thegardeningshow.com, down at the bottom of the page. Have a fantastic week. I hope you're in an area that gets some rain. See you next week.